Hi, this is Felicia Baxter, your neighborhood grouch, Tenfro, broadcasting from Forest Avenue in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Welcome to another episode of Tenfro is Reading, and hi, I'm your host. I will be discussing many things today, in particular COVID and other COVID shenanigans, as well as just talking about what I'm reading and getting into how privilege is a double-edged sword, white as well as black, and rounding it out by what I'm eating, listening to, and watching. And as always, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and thank you for joining me. I try not to be afraid for anything, but in this next section of the podcast where I'll be talking about COVID and just general COVID shenanigans and just shenaniganry in general, it just seems that I will survive by Gloria Gaynor as a way to, as a good introduction or a background for this. Just one second, you'll be back to bother me. Oh, now go!
Walk out the door! Just turn around now, 'cause you're not welcome.
And this song is available for immediate streaming and purchase on iTunes or wherever you listen to music. This weekend is a weekend of multitasking and a lot going on, even though I haven't gone anywhere. The furthest I went away today was to the grocery store. And this week I had my first screening colonoscopy, and that also reminds me I need to get on the schedule to get my flu shot for this year, because it'll be exactly 2 weeks after my first shingles vaccine, which I have to get the second one in November. Just note to self and note to other people that are 50. COVID, if you find out what the high risk groups are, you may need to get a booster. If you're over, I believe, 65, or is it 60, as well as some other diagnoses that make you high risk, like if you're immunocompromised. If you're undergoing cancer treatment, you're fucking immunocompromised. If you are HIV positive, those types of things. Also, I don't know if they're counting asthma, high blood pressure, and obesity as putting you in a high risk group. And if you're African American, I mention all of that to say, because I have all of those things. So I may need, I may be able to squeak it. Or if you're in some type of high exposure field, like a practicing physician or a nurse, you may want to go ahead and get your booster. However, there still is the flu. Shingles is a real thing, and it can be very painful. And we do have a vaccine against shingles. It's recommended for 50 and over. I had my first one 2 weeks ago. I'm getting my second one after Thanksgiving. And then it's late for me to, it's really late for me. I usually get my flu vaccine earlier, like in August to September. But with COVID and then I got the shingles, it changed up that plan. At least I can do all of the maintenance things as I transition all of my health care to Tennessee. That's why I got my colonoscopy through Galen Medical, and then I'm going to go and see Dr. Bouchon, the internal medicine physician at Galen Medical on in November. And I'm also finding, as I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I'm watching the virtual 2021 AAP convention, and it's actually really cool because I go to use my bathroom, I can get in my heated pool, all from the privacy of my house. I can also get something to eat and do other things like go to the movies and watch the live stream, the recorded live stream later. And I'll be talking about, it became also a bond watching week. Daniel Craig, just FYI, I'll mention this again and when I get to that section about what I'm watching, but the current James Bond, Daniel Craig, is now leaving the franchise. And now basically how he is going to be moving on, and it's led to some speculation, will the new James Bond be Jamesina Bond or whatever? Will she be also of a different race? Who knows? Don't know. But the replace 007, because this is another one of those Bonds that he actually, the previous one, he actually, it sounds like he died. And if it was anything like Windfall or the other ones where he actually looked like he did get shot and die, it would make sense that his replacement, this time he ain't coming back though, y'all. I'm just saying, I don't know, spoilers, but everybody knew that watches the series knew that he wasn't coming back, but he ain't coming back from this one. So unless he somehow got into some bubble, he probably, this James, I think James Bond is truly dead, but I digress. But what I'm talking about is the COVID. What I've also thought, and what I was alluding to or getting ready to speak about, was that in the era of COVID, I'm actually very happy that I had a job that I was already working from home. And it's been extended indefinitely. There really is no reason for me to really come, go back on campus. It would be so bad, except for I do vaguely recall the long and amount of time I absolutely had to walk. I was looking at my badge. I don't even think it works anymore. It basically got kind of baked as it hung from my rearview mirror on my truck for so long. I was gainfully employed throughout that whole time. I was still getting bonuses, and I am going to be able to continue on that. I'm also very happy that I don't have to work as a contractor, that I can continue to work from home. I think it gives me a lot of time. I can read, I can do other things. For example, I can do this podcast. I have the platform, I have the equipment, and I'm ready to go. I also have disposable income where I can also hire people. Not only do I have the time to look up things and have the time to write, I can also free up more of my time by actually hiring other people to be guest bloggers for content. I came up with this, and it was not like I had this at my disposal because I actually worked as a contractor, but I will be reading this post in total because it was so well written by my Pakistani guest writer. I think her name is Natasha or Pashma. But I will be reading her views on vaccine hesitancy in Asia from a post-colonial perspective. It's actually very, I thought it was very well written. Not only was I given direct content from the 2021's convention as far as COVID, but also just the general shenanigans that I actually read about from the paper. For example, Moderna and Pfizer, but specifically Moderna, these pharmaceutical companies are tripping me out. The company that is has provided Moderna is now being accused of basically only providing their vaccine for countries that can afford it. I don't know what y'all were thinking. These pharmaceutical companies are publicly traded businesses. I basically focused on all of what their stock prices are going for per share last week. They are a business. They are beholden to shareholders. They ain't giving shit for free. We may have bought a billion doses and we helped them provide funding for their R&D to develop these vaccines, but they ain't giving shit away. It doesn't make any sense. Am I saying it's ethically right? No, I'm not saying it's ethically right, but what are y'all tripping for? They are a purely capitalist company. Why do y'all think they would be focusing only on those people that can afford to buy their vaccine? I don't get what the whole, why is this front page news? We all knew this. So with that said, that doesn't shock me. What did shock me is Indian Health Service were denying health care to Black natives. Little known fun fact, little known fun and also despicable fact. Seminole, Cherokee, and I believe several of the Plains Indian tribes, Native American tribes, absolutely owned slaves during that despicable period in American history. They actually fought for and supported the Confederacy for the right to continue to own Black slaves. Mind you that we all marginalized. They are worse so because not only was the entire country stolen from them, they were relegated to the reservations. But on these reservations, some of them owned slaves. There's a group of Native Americans that this woman looks like me except for her hair. I like her curls. They're called freedmen, and they are a darker subsection of the Seminole Native Americans. Because they can trace their line back to this group with that particular blood, they actually are considered. Technically, they are truly of Native American descent, not just claiming it and appropriating it. They really are genetically part of the tribe. But that means that they should have access to healthcare services. But what was happening is they were being turned away, not just getting the vaccine, but just in general, those services and it just became more prevalent now with COVID because one of the nurses turned one of the freedmen away. And this is all recently. No, this is not 1950, 1960. This is October of 2021. To the point where they actually had, it was written to their separate constitutions that they cannot refuse service because they are a nation within a nation and they cannot expect to get U.S. government funding and refuse access to this darker subsection of their tribe. And I'm floored. This is what really floored me and why this is such shenanigans. This is 2021, and we still have obvious, blatant racism that's perpetuated even in our marginalized people. But I'm glad it was identified. I'm glad it's reversed. How long is it going to take to stop? And what other things that they are going to, or that COVID is going to allow us to, that's going to peel back the truths or untruths of it all. One of the numbers that, if you look at COVID by the numbers, the whole health inequities that are prevalent within our Black, Native American, and Latinx community. The lack of availability and lack, it's where there's poverty, unemployment, and uninsured, we have the highest prevalence of syphilis, diabetes, heart disease, and now this scourge called COVID. And we have we are still the least and still have the lowest access to good vaccines as well as to the vaccine. And we, even though in some places there could be a vaccine, but we're still not vaccinated for a wide variety of things. And there's a lot of distrust. And what still doesn't help is a lot of the stupidity that people are allowed to say. And news outlets like Fox and that fool Tucker Carlson, the politicalization of vaccine and mask, and just widespread misinformation is what is still continuing to drive vaccine uptake in my community. One of the sections or one of the seminars that I actually had the pleasure of watching or participating in was dispelling the myths of COVID. And I actually, this was a 66 slide deck, 66 slide deck. I printed it out in total because I thought it was important for me to be able to hold this treasure trove of, and to be able to talk to the necessity and just how some of these myths are just absolutely crazy. And I'm going to start with a short, a documentary short that was absolutely taken down because it was rife with misinformation. It's called Plandemic. They were talking about in this particular documentary, there are microbes in the ocean that can cure COVID-19. That protective masks actually do the opposite, doesn't protect you from SARS or COVID. It actually activates it. Bill Gates created the pandemic so he could make money selling vaccines to prevent it. As far as I know, Microsoft, I don't know if Bill Gates owns stock in some of these biotech, these biopharmaceutical companies, but as last I heard, Microsoft wasn't a biotech company. I'm sorry. And then the death certificates have been manipulated to control the public. If anything, I think the deaths from COVID actually have been grossly underestimated because there may be, there's evidence that this epidemic or pandemic started earlier than we thought. Just because we didn't go on lockdown until March doesn't mean that this was a problem months prior to that. They said that the influenza vaccine increases the chance of getting COVID. Not only are you trying to instill fear, about COVID vaccine, you're also trying to instill fear with the flu vaccine, and the flu kills about 100,000 people a year too. And no, and then they were talking about the vaccine contains COVID-19. No, it doesn't. Stop it. This actually dropped in May of 2020, and it took a while to get taken down, but the damage had already been done. The next are just me mentioning a potpourri of misinformation. There's a private school that won't employ vaccinated teachers because they basically said that vaccinated teachers are dangerous to students. Wouldn't you think that would actually pertain to students? Protect the students. And the death claimed by COVID from the vaccines, complete misrepresentation of the information. And he said it with a fucking straight face. I can't. I hate him. No, the vaccines don't kill people. COVID kills people. And no, the whole issue with spike protein that's in the vaccine leading to these clots, no, COVID does not change your DNA because it's a different type of ribonucleotide acid. It's called messenger RNA that is only parts of the virus and not the whole virus. And no, it can't get together and create a whole virus. And no, the messenger RNA is not inserted into your DNA. It's not possible. Don't have the enzymes to be able to do that. No, I'd even heard this, that COVID vaccines cause you to become magnetic. No. And we got Karens before boards with straight face. And even PhDs and doctors saying it's dumb shit. No, COVID does not cause you to become magnetic. I can't even. No. Yes, you can and should get vaccinated during pregnancy. No, it does not cause any danger to your fetus. No, it does not cause you to be sterile. If anything, if you do, the most vulnerable population to get COVID is pregnant women. And these women are more likely to get on a ventilator and die from natural COVID infection. So they are high risk and you need to get vaccinated. The American College of Gynecology said this. Why are y'all tripping? The science behind it does not support it. And as I stated before, there's no science to support that COVID changes your DNA because it does. It's impossible. There is no science to support the fact that all of these things. Yes, COVID, there is a pandemic and it does include children. They should be vaccinated. And this whole, we got the numbers today and the high rates of high hospitalization rates and the increase in death rates in unvaccinated kids because the dumb parents are not vaccinated and that are dying. Also proves that the science supports your kids getting vaccinated. The safety issues, the science doesn't support the safety. Yes, there are some very serious potential side effects, but the benefits outweigh the risks. Natural COVID infection is not something that you can bet your money over on getting. That whole issue about you do not have a personal right to continue to put other people at risk and to force other people to take care of you when you got a treatment, a prevention for it. Your personal liberties be damned. That has nothing to do with your personal liberties, and it's stupid. The science doesn't support. Also, in order for hydroxychloroquine to have anti-COVID effects, you would have to take a lethal dose of it, because taking at current dosages, you can't get where you need to get it to work, where the COVID is. You can't get those levels. Again, the science doesn't support the use of hydroxychloroquine. And we could talk about ivermectin all day long. That is a parasite. Virus, COVID is a viral. Ivermectin is not an antiviral. So therefore, it's not going to work. And what makes, and the urgency is this MIS-C syndrome, the post-viral myocarditis and systemic vasculitis that looks like Kawasaki's. And I'm thinking, was Kawasaki's the beginning of that? Was it caused by either a type of COVID? Because yes, there are 45 different types of COVID. But this MIS-C is no joke. Why wouldn't you get your child vaccinated if it's going to prevent that? And I say all of this to say we have three safe vaccines. I believe the Pfizer and Moderna, even with the Moderna shenanigans, Johnson & Johnson it's only one dose, but I think it is still safe to prevent original natural COVID and to keep you from getting deathly ill. Because there's proof is in the pudding. Once you actually get on ECMO, or ventilated, your chances of surviving natural COVID starts to drop. And then the long recovery after it. There's nothing I can possibly do that convince. I'm like Dr. Offit. I don't think if someone is completely at this point, after 100 million doses of these vaccines have been given and they still don't believe the hype, they don't believe that there is a pandemic, even with 700,000 deaths, there's nothing I'm going to be able to say or do to convince them otherwise. But what I am going to say is we have safe vaccines. Your kids need to be vaccinated. It's not a personal right for you to put everybody else at risk. If we had done what we were supposed to have been done in the beginning and y'all weren't with the dumbness, we could have basically controlled this pandemic, and we could have been like SARS, like the Ebola scare. We could have possibly been emerging from this. We could have done it all last year, and it really beguiles me that there were 700,000 people that did not have to die. I was already weird. I did not have to be on an extended isolation because y'all were with the dumbness, rushing up on the Capitol, protesting masks and vaccines and plotting to kill people because you didn't want to do something, and you made it, and it was made to be okay. Just because you can do stuff doesn't mean you can't. But what is fueling the distrust? The distrust in vaccines is not a new thing here, but I was able to get a firsthand account of vaccine hesitancy from a different perspective in Asia. And I've had the pleasure of finding a guest blogger from Pakistan who I believe has done an amazing job as far as telling the truth about vaccine hesitancy in her country. And without any further ado, I'm going to read to you an amazingly written post that I recently did this past weekend. I've gotten a couple of likes. It's been gotten a couple of reads, and I'm hopeful that everyone that reads Ramsha's Disease Denial and Death, Vaccine Hesitancy in Asia will agree. She's an up and coming writer. Vaccine rollout across Asia has started to pick up the pace after a slow start due to shortages and political hurdles. Moderna, you are right in the midst or the mix of the cause of this, I believe. However, this success can prove to be short-lived owing to the vast amount of misinformation campaigns and hoaxes that are appearing on social media platforms. Spreading awareness about vaccination to counter misinformation is hard as it involves technical knowledge. The lack thereof makes people anxious and scared of the unknown, which is capitalized upon those who are against vaccinations. This fear, anxiety, and often at times anger against the government makes it difficult to curb vaccine hesitancy. Such is the case in most of Asia, as millions are underprivileged people who don't have access to quality education are therefore more susceptible to be influenced by COVID misinformation. The root causes of public hesitancy in Asia against getting vaccinated can be traced back to the very beginning of the pandemic, when there was initial success in curbing the spread of the virus by social distancing and lockdowns. People gradually overcame their sense of urgency as false comparisons of COVID with mere common cold became mainstream, which led to many denying the seriousness of the pandemic. Furthermore, the lockdowns and curbs to movement meant to control the spread of COVID left many without a source of income and becoming disenchanted with their governments, blaming them for failing to balance protecting lives and livelihoods. Disenchantment with public officials and politicians went hand in hand with vaccine hesitancy as vaccine rollouts began and governments tried to coerce people into getting vaccinated. As a result, misinformation related to the side effects of getting vaccinated outpaced the rate of vaccinations. Furthermore, developed countries like Japan and Philippines already had a history of vaccine safety-related incidents, and all the hoaxes about COVID vaccine further decreased public trust in vaccines. Questions about the safety of vaccines were indeed paramount, mainly because China was the region's main supplier of vaccines, and the lack of data backing up their efficacy combined with anti-China sentiment in Southeast Asia made people skeptical over getting vaccines supplied by China. Vaccine diplomacy played a role in this regard as well. Hundreds of thousands of people from South Asia work abroad in the Middle East, and many more in Europe as well. Almost all of them had received Sinopharm or Sinovac jabs, but they weren't allowed to travel internationally unless they got a booster dose of a non-Chinese produced, which I think is crazy, vaccine such as Pfizer or Moderna. The legacy of the region's colonial past also persuaded the masses to opt for vaccines supplied by America or the United Kingdom over the ones from China, as like with any other commodity, the label of being produced in America was more publicly acceptable. To conclude, misinformation campaigns against the side effects of vaccines, I went over all of those previously, skepticism over the efficacy of vaccines, discontent against forced vaccinations, and preference of one vaccine or the other are the major contributing factors to growing vaccination hesitancy in Europe. In summary, the after effects of colonialism and misinformation are fueling COVID vaccine hesitancy in Asia. And at the end of this post, I asked for what are your thoughts and what are you thinking that is contributing to this hesitancy wherever you listen to this podcast. And I forgot that I believe that is associated with my Tinfro is reading at gmail.com account. So if you want to send me a non-trolly message directly to that account, or you can just leave a comment. And if it is, again, if it's non-trolly, I'll actually try or will read your comment and your reaction. On an upcoming segment of the podcast. And I'm also looking forward to an expansion of what is fueling vaccine hesitancy in Japan and Philippines, because I was actually pretty shocked at the Summer Olympics when they said only 30-35% of the Japanese population was vaccinated, and they were really protesting more people coming to Japan because it was going to be a surge, but they didn't want to get vaccinated, which made no sense to me. And I'm wondering is Ramshad going to basically explain a little bit better that they know this pandemic. It's not like they're denying it, but they just don't trust the treatment and where that stems from. I'm also waiting for a deliverable on another article about what other countries think about our response to vaccination. And I'll be getting a writer. If it goes well, a writer from Sri Lanka will be giving me that perspective. I'll probably be posting that a little bit later on this week once we finish the edits and it's ready for prime time. But that ends this segment. And I did a lot of fussing about COVID shenanigans and COVID in general. And I hope you have received my whole goal was to point out the misinformation and what has led to continued vaccine hesitancy, not only here, but even in Asia. Widespread, but it is absolutely there. The bottom line is we've had people keep telling us this. We have a tool. We need to use it. We got over 100, 150 million people that have had these jabs that we know it's safe. You got to be vaccinated. That is the only way we can safely go back and be as free as we were. I'm going to probably get a booster, but I don't think I'm still going to feel comfortable going out and about like I once was because this COVID is no joke. It's just too perfectly sinister and all around deadly for me to feel comfortable being able to go back to some semblance of free mobility that I had previously.
butterfly in the sky. I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
Yes, that's Reading Rainbow theme song from LeVar Burton's classic Reading Rainbow. I think now it's a show. It was a show, now it's a great popular podcast. And what a great way to introduce this section of the podcast, because I will be talking about what I'm reading this week. And it's varied. I've added several things to my online bookstore, Chatterbooks, that is sponsored by my bookshop or bookshop.org. Through one of my favorite pastimes is reading the book review, the New York Times book review. And I've also have a different perspective on the young woman named Dasani that was followed by a white reporter for a decade. And basically, she reported as this young black woman blew up her life. She could have, if she had stayed in school and followed truly someone like Reading Rainbow, I don't think she would have given up. But I don't know what was going on in her mind. It seems that her life was awful. But I do offer a hopeful, a different perspective on her struggles. And again, as always, this has become one of my favorite sections of the show, and I hope you enjoy it. It always seems that I'm actually reading multiple things at a time. I dedicate first part of my day to reading, at least perusing the daily papers or local papers. And then I will, if I have time, I'll absolutely look at the LA Times as well as before I watch the news. I'm becoming more and more disillusioned with the daily news. I find sometimes really no news is good news, even with the shakeup in the newscasts or the newscasters on CBS. I am finding it more and more difficult to pay rapt attention to the daily news or the local news, and I'm thirsting for other stuff to pique my interest and educate my soul, so to speak. And this week has been very interesting because I was a seller on Fiverr. It's a service that allows people to contract and write blog posts, etc., for other people. I came up with this, and it's right in alignment with the subjects and stuff that I blog on, but I thought this would be a way for me to focus on my other interests and other blog posts. And the part of the podcast, I'm trying to seriously get into writing this fictional pod script for a contest that is still about couple of months out, but I'm excited about participating in that. But I'm also excited about reading other perspectives from up-and-coming writers. And I was connected with another writer that I'm going to read her pod. I am going to read her posting in complete. In completion, in another segment of the show. But this particular part of the podcast, Tenfro is Reading, is what it's all about. One of my favorite pastimes is reading the book review. Actually, it's reading all the sections of the Sunday New York Times, but in particular, the book review. And I've noticed, and yes, the book review has their own podcast. They have excellent guests, and they interview each other and other editors, etc. And it would be one of my dreams to actually write something to actually be invited as a guest on their show, or I could just have my own show and talk and write and review my own stuff or other stuff as I see fit. Last week's, or was it week before last, they featured a girl that in 2013 that was featured, that was a homeless youth in New York City. Her name is Dasani, and a reporter, a white reporter, actually followed her. It's probably, she'll probably even win some type of journalist review for her, they said, exquisite reporting on homelessness, because at one point her entire family was homeless, and poverty and health equity, all of these things. Was following this kid for a decade, and her book just dropped, I believe this week. $30. God damn. It's 602 pages. I would say go out and buy it, but I'm not sure, because I know that the kid, Dasani, nor her 12 siblings or her parents are going to see a penny of the proceeds from this book. I also, when I read the first write-up a couple of weeks ago in the New York Magazine, I was stunned by how hard this girl looked, meaning there was no light in her eyes. You could see her tracks. Her tracks, or where her lace fronts was actually peeling up. And on the front page of the book review, there's a side-by-side page of her as a preteen, and then now her as a hard eyes, bonnet wearing, Daisy Duke clad young adult. And how far and how old she looks. And how painful her eyes look. There's a deadness in her eyes, or hardness that wasn't there in those hopeful pictures of the little girl with the puffy ponytail and the easy smile. It seems oblivious, but still kind of oblivious, but well aware of the dangers all around her, but she still was easy gone. And that hardened girl that's next to her, you could hardly recognize that it was the same kid, and it only had like 8 years had passed, and she's a hard looking 21-22 year old. Two things stand out from this story is that the tragedy of her situation, and I don't think, because this kid goes through, the bottom line is, this reporter, white reporter, sat by, but basically tells this story of how this kid goes from hope to desperation, and so different than how it all started out. And she blew up her life in the interim, because she ends up getting a scholarship to the Hershey School in Pennsylvania. And then she visits and she gets drawn back into home crap because she starts to feel guilty about getting out. She actually has survivor's guilt. And I think even though this school had well-meaning quote-unquote allies or panderers, however you would want to. And evidently she did have a counselor, but I think if she had a counselor that looked like her and could, and she could actually have benefited from a down sister or brother that could have given her the focus and telling this 12 or 13 year old that it's not your fault that your parents ain't shit and they making bad, bad choices. And that the only way that you are going to escape a certain death or this situation is getting educated. You have to get your education. If she could have survived for just another couple of years, I think she would have gone on to college and she could have been the counselor or become the person that she have needed to get the rest of her, legitimately get the rest of her family out of herself and her family out of poverty. But that wasn't meant to be. And I think if there had been a reporter, again, that looked like her, that could have directed her to a counselor that also looked like her, that could have steered her, encouraged her to stay in that school and not blow up her life, it would have been a lot differently. Because I think if the reporter and the counselor that truly looked like her, they would not have allowed her to blow up her life. They would have been able to guide her to a whole different dynamic, and this story wouldn't have been so tragic. And we would have seen a side by side. It would just been a slightly older version, but a hope-filled, fresh face kid. That second picture would have looked completely different. The also I read in this week's book review is I've made some additions to other sections of Chatterbooks. I don't forget, I do actually have an online bookstore sponsored through bookshop.org under /Chatterbooks, where you can get all the books that I'm actually mentioning today on the podcast and previous podcasts. But this book I was added to not only to my children's book, but to my LGBTQ coming of age section. It says An Ordinary Wonder, first book by Buki Papillon. It's about, even in the best of circumstances, adolescence is a strange and uncomfortable experience. It is about a gender fluid kid in Nigeria who survives the almost harrowing abuse by his mother, who considers her, because she identified, even though she is genetically a male, she identifies as a female, and how this is completely unheard of in this small Nigerian village. All through a harrowing childhood, adolescence, and then finally escaping it and becoming, is this story of perseverance and self-assurance and about identity and the how it could be completely dangerous. And it's like you are signing your own death notice if you are in sub-Saharan Africa and or identify as another gender, non-binary, etc. So I think that'll actually be a good read. I've made other additions to my children's books. Born Behind Bars is by Padma Venkatraman, who actually tells a story about the story of Rana, and who is born, actually, Born Behind Bars, and how she becomes something other than to get her and her mother out of prison. Also, there is a whole Beautiful Mind story, how the brilliance of a girl that loves science and earns her two tickets out of poverty. That's In the Light by Jeff Zintner. Again, both of those books are have been added to the children's section, as well as the other being added to not only children, actually teenagers, because it's about a teenager, adolescent, as well as my LGBTQ section on coming of age. The last book that is also I'm reading, because I'm also watching this television show on Hulu, but it's actually through Fox, is Our Kind of People. It goes into, it's called Our Kind of People, and the author, it's available on Chatterbooks, but it gets into Black privilege, and I didn't know or understand the extensiveness about old Black money. And it's more than just about wealth and true generational wealth. It is about how Black people created a singular and separate society outside of the overall society, because they weren't being let into white society, but it was the uber successful, the doctors, lawyers, businessmen, insurance, bankers. And they wanted their children to only be exposed to that type of elite. Usually they were color struck, high yellow, but the uber successful Blacks in their community. And they lived such a completely different life than the average middle class, and definitely the people that lived in the ghettos or that were truly poor. They could not identify with them no more than they could identify with white kids of equal substance as their family. And the writer writes from a place where he was dark. He's summered and went to the same camps as these people and were a part of the Jack and Jill play groups, but he also, I think the author now of that book is now a lawyer, but it wasn't until he became an adult that he now realized the new generation of the Black elite, and then how, and also talking to people like myself outside of that, and what is our perception of them. And how all of this in their way to secure their own success, how they basically boxed other people out from attaining that type of wealth, from spreading what their families had to do to actually establish themselves. And it's not that they were going to give it all away, because that's stupid. But they were going to teach them how to, because some people can work their way up and obtain new money and the financial security that their families took generations to obtain. There are certain people, parts of us that I admire the privilege. It has not been until recently where I've become a part of that privilege. I'm only on the outskirts. I'm not balling in no means, but I get it, and I'll never forget where I came from. And I know that even with being gainfully employed, it's my place in middle class is still very tenuous, because I know if I did lose my job, I have nothing else but what would I have to fall back on? That's why I'm trying to create a product, as far as being a podcaster or even my bookstore and my merchandise, to have something, another stream of income, to be able to have at least something to fall back on because I don't have the generational wealth. My wealth or semblance of it starts with me. I don't have anything else to fall back on, and I can't have, and it wouldn't make much sense for me to willy-nilly give it all away before I would have a way to replenish it. That doesn't make any sense to me. And I'm trying to make other family members understand that, you know, I am by no means in a position to continue to always give. I don't have the privilege of having to fall back on, and I don't want to give away everything I've worked so hard for. That doesn't make any good financial sense. And for, until people understand that, they're not going to be able to understand that you're not going to be able to go live where I live and or go where I go. That's not a possibility unless you're going to or unless you are willing to work as hard as I am and assist me in being able to do everything that I'm doing to be able to make that kind of scratch for all of us to go forward. But I'm not going to be able, none of us are going to go forward if you're going to keep pulling, having a financial and emotional, look at that, an emotional attachment and acting like a crab and pulling people back. You may say that that was not your intent, but that's exactly what your intent is. And don't say that you are not jealous. And if you were to be more truthful for yourself, you would not ask for and do or make some of the crazy decisions that people make when they look at what you have and you are envious. And that makes you do make jackleg, poor financial decisions. So I say all of that to say is white privilege and black privilege. The thing about either one of them is they're a double-edged cutting sword. You basically function within that and do things and you don't realize that people that have never had a privilege, that same level of privileges you have, are when you meet somebody or come up with somebody that's not doesn't operate in that privilege, and you can't understand about cultural appropriation, you can't understand about microaggressions, and you think people will tolerate things just because you consider them your friend or y'all are neighbors, but they are microaggressions, and you need to stop and think for a minute and what certain actions and ask and request means to someone that has never, ever lived that type of, that lived within that level of privilege. And it may be confusing, and their reactions may seem kind of off-putting and aggressive, but you got to also try to understand from their standpoint when you're always operating within a certain system where there's the haves and the have-nots. And even within the have-nots, there are a certain group of people that are still consider themselves entitled because anybody that has a little bit more than they do should want to keep give them what they don't have. And that is completely preposterous and stupid. But it is, that is a part of the have-nots. And it's really glaring when there is such a difference between perceived privilege and when you really don't have anything, and what people will do and think and say when they are at their most desperate. So that's where I'm going to end this section of the podcast about what I'm reading. And it seems like every time I read something, it inspires me to write something or becomes a part of the podcast. So I have to be really careful that I have to stop reading, because the more I read, the more ideas that I get and the more I want to talk about it. So there you go. And it just makes for an extremely long podcast when I go out like that. That is Act One from Turandot, Puccini's last opera. Actually, after an 18-month hiatus, it came back. This week. And arguably,
Andrea Botticelli is one of the greatest baritones next to Pavarotti. This is a little bit more of a different riff. This is Fire Shut Up in My Bones, which is also premiered at the Met. It is an adaptation by Terrence Blanchine of Do the Right Thing fame. This is actually also sung by a female alto, and the guy in the movie, in the opera, is actually another baritone. And then what I was listening to or have been watching all this week, which actually is a great introduction to this section of what I'm eating, listening to, and watching. All of those songs that I previously played are available for immediate streaming on iTunes. But this, you are probably going to have to go to the movie theater or stream it on Prime Video. This is the James Bond theme by John Barry. I was able to catch a premiere of No Time to Die, the last of the Daniel Craig turn as 007. The music, the theme, This Year by Billie Eilish, the technology, the cars, the fashion, all over the top opulence and quintessential Bond, and it made for a great watch. And enjoy this riff on the classic James Bond theme.
So, I'm watching Zeke run as far as the football game today. He gets pushed out of bounds, and he's slow to get up. I am very concerned. This will suck if he... I'm hoping he just got the air knocked out of him, and it's nothing real, real crazy. Like, oh, it could be his arm or shoulder. Who knows? But this is a section because I get ideas for this part. This part of the podcast, what I'm eating, listening to, and watching. Eating is usually the same thing. A lot of fried stuff. I finished eating the rest of my chicken from the shack. Putting that in the air fryer does it body good. I have discovered that my dog also likes root vegetables and soups. Daily Harvest is the bomb as far as ethyl gets in to the food, or good food and good stuff good for her. And that comes because she starts skipping when she sees the package from Farmer's Dog. My top podcast. What is going on? My top podcasts are as follows. The Lit Podcast. He limping. There's too many people getting hurt in this game. But anyways, The Read, Ratchet and Respectable, and The Black Guy That Tips. I love all of those. And Even the Rich. I listened to part 5 of their history of Mariah Carey. And I thoroughly enjoy. I get great... ideas about what to include and not to include in my podcast, because I honestly think they've been doing this longer and they have their own listenership. I'm still trying to find my way, and there are very few things I want to entertain, but also to educate if I can. And if I know that there is another podcast that is doing basically the same thing, everybody wants to be unique and give a different perspective about things. So I'm hopeful that I won't repeat things, but I also like the way that one of my newest podcasts that I started listening to, as I said, was The Lit Crew. Let me pull this up. Lit Society, Books and Drama. Basically, they watch movies, and it's them going back and forth, and it looks like they're actually kind of scripted. But they have this back and forth, and they bounce things off of each other, and it sounds like they've been friends for a while. They don't get into trouble as far as copyright issues, because they basically just give their perspective and a summary. They really don't read illegally any of, why is he already dancing? Okay, so he short dancing before he even goes in. Okay, I'm watching Ezekiel Elliott, took a stinger and it looked like he was out. He gets it. And then before he even gets to the end zone, I guess they can't give him over celebration. He's high stepping it before he steps in. It was a short run. It just seems like for those of us that don't know me, if you are a Dallas Cowboy fan, it really seems like this crew is actually having so much fun as far as what they seem like they're just having so much more fun than they've absolutely had in a very long time. And it just makes me happy watching these guys play, because they basically look like the Dallas Cowboy team when Prescott, through quarterback controversy, was replaced that fool. I can't even remember his name. Lots of back injuries. Didn't know why Romo wasn't sat down before there was a quarterback controversy with Dak Prescott about 4 or 5 years ago. They looking like that team, and why I was so into the Cowboys. If it wasn't for COVID, I would have had so much fun going back to watch them play the Giants at AT&T Stadium. But no, I'm here because y'all won't get vaccinated. But that's a whole different story. Tired of fussing. But what I was basically saying is, every time I listen to these podcasts, I get ideas about content for my podcast. And I also get ideas about how I can actually change the format and make the podcast better. So the more podcasts I listen to, the more different formats I get exposed to, the better I think my scripts are going to be, and the better my content is always going to be. In addition to watching the Cowboys, because kickoff was started up, they did it a little bit late because the game between the Bengals and the Green Bay actually ran long, and Green Bay won it, their game, by a field goal. That was a sweet field goal too. They won it in overtime. And it looked like it was a good game. I only caught the last few minutes of it before Cowboys kicked off. And then I had to get back to my conference. But it just seems like today was a good Sunday football day. But it also was a weekend that the last installation of the Daniel Craig Bond series premiered. And I was absolutely able to see that on Saturday afternoon. The song, theme song, was actually written and performed by Billie Eilish, and it was actually quintessential Billie Eilish. The formula was the same. It starts off where it looks like James Bond either almost died or they think they killed him, and he really comes back like a roach. He comes back from the dead. And then the whole whole movie is about him pissing off his director, M, almost getting killed several times throughout the movie. And then finally he meets his maker at the end. But this one is different because, as I said, it was his last in a 13-year history of that Daniel Craig is going to be moving on to other things. This movie was supposed to premiere last year, but because of the COVID, it didn't premiere until this year. And it looks like it's probably going to do good well at the box office. I was kind of confused because it seems like there was a series of scenes at different areas. There was a lot. It was gory. It was very violent. But what can you do? And also, the Cowboys, who is this? The defense just picked off the Giants first. There's probably going to be another quarterback controversy. This is Diggs basically picks off this almost Hail Mary. It was a beautiful, it's not pass interference. He basically picked off an underthrown ball. But anyways, so, and then I went back as I was watching No Time to Die. And there's no spoilers because everybody knows that Daniel Craig is not going to return as Bond after this movie drops. He dies. I'm just not going to tell you how he dies. As I was saying, I was really confused because I didn't know if this was quintessential Bond, that it seems like all of the scenes were kind of disjointed, but the theme was the same. People were coming after security of Great Britain. And they had to get through Bond to do that. In the interim, he discovers a past love, somebody that double-crossed him. He finds out towards the end of his life that he actually has progeny, even though homegirl dies. There is a holdover from Spectre, and I'm just watching that, so I can't tell you how that dude plays in, and that subset of crazy plays into that, because Spectre dropped, 007 Spectre dropped in 2015, and I'm just getting to that. But before I got to that, I watched the first one that premiered with him was Casino Royale. I basically fell asleep on that, so I didn't really see all of that, but it was just as violent. And his wife died, and that's how the final one. I just realized that. The final Bond started with the death, with him almost getting killed at his wife that died in 2006. Imagine that. Then I don't even know if Dame Judi Dench was already M in 2006, but I did see her in 2008, and I thought they did a better job with the Haute to Luxury brands. There was the Alfa Romeo and the Tech. It was just a bomb. We were introduced to Felix from the CIA, who makes his final appearance in this last iteration of Bond. Another Way to Die was the theme music for that one, and it was sung by Alicia Keys. Also, 2012 Skyfall I thought was good. M meets her maker, and the theme song Skyfall was sung by Adele. That was actually really good too. And then Spectre, I just started watching that prior to the beginning, or when I was on lunch coming back from the AAP's convention. So I don't know who did the theme on that. But it just has, it's a combination of many things. It started in 2012 when Bond started showing his age. And then 2015, I'm wondering if it's going to be a continuation on that. But I do recall one scene prior to me having to turn it off, where basically the building that he shot somebody through, that building collapses, and then that building collapses on him. He falls to like 3 or 4 floors, and his coat, which was buttoned, the button never pops. Either that's really good tailoring, or that it just makes him like the bomb. It just cracks me up. How can you be smooth when everything around you is still collapsing? Also, I think I was thinking too much on this. Who's to say that the British means of order and protecting us from espionage or from spying and from terrorists, who has to say that the British theory and views is the absolute right way? It's just that they did a better job of making this movie and this almost invincible spy character. And it wasn't lost on me that the British spy office is called MI6. And I was tripped out that I basically sat in M16, seat M16 in the IMAX theater to watch the Bond movie. So go figure. I was all into it. My whole determination is to watch probably at least once all of the Daniel Craig 007. But I'm also salivating over all the technology and the cars and the clothes and the luxe, because that's what... It's all colonialism, I know. It's all materialistic, I know. But it's my way of suspending suspense of reality, and I'm with it, just saying. And it's a lot of fun. If you have the opportunity, I'm not saying that you need it. Was it acceptable to risk getting COVID to go see it in a theater? Probably not. I think you can wait until it does come on whatever streaming service that's going to be available, where it's going to be available, either on Prime or probably on HBO. So don't risk COVID to go in and see the movie. Wait till it comes out on BritBox or something like that. Just saying. And that is Groove Is in the Heart. It just seems like this weekend was a great weekend for creatives or a creative like myself. I was blessed with a wealth of great content. And as always, this is how I'm going to wrap up this show. And I hope you will join me next week as I bring you more from Forest Avenue. Don't forget to navigate to the Dale's Angels Inc. blog, the shop, to pick up on merchandise, as well as to my charitable bookstore that is actually supported by bookshop.org. Navigate to writersblockcoffee.com and use my promo code 10PRO to get a percentage off of your orders. And for those people that just need a glitter bomb or a 1 foot or 12 inch chocolate penis, navigate to shippingbaggydicks.com and use my promo code 10PROGOTJOKES to get a percentage off of your order. Follow me on TV Food Wine Girl on Twitter, as well as my Instagram handle, 10Fro is greeting, to look for screen lickable food, me chilling next to the saltwater heated pool, and ramen for days. And I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I've enjoyed creating it, and continue to groove. And also, a non-trolling comment. I may actually read it on air and give you some gold beans if you happen to listen to it on Podbean. And again, get your groove on, y'all, this Sunday evening. In this torso, heart got a deal, you won't know. Delightful, truly delightful. Making it, doing it, especially at a show. Feeling kinda high like a Hendrix haze. Music.